It's an honor to work with the Iraqi vets and Afghanistan vets. It not only helps them, it helps me also.
Veterans helping other veterans navigate the VA system. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, November 11th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, working to help homeless kids in Fairbanks.
They couch surf, they hang out with friends. Sometimes they compromise their safety and make decisions that we wouldn't want any child to make.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. November is National Family Caregivers and Alzheimer's Awareness Month. Are you one of the thousands of Alaskans who provide care for a family member who is chronically ill, elderly, or has a disability? Well, there are resources and help for you and your loved one. For information, visit alaskaaging.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Aging and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
U.S. House Natural Resources Committee Chair Doc Hastings of Washington and Alaska's Representative Don Young announced plans today to push the Alaska Energy for American Jobs Act. The measure would allow for oil and gas development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge on the coastal plain. Hastings says in a news release that the measure will open less than 3% of ANWR's 19 million acres and produce billions of barrels of oil and generate billions of dollars in revenue. Environmentalists say the figures used to tout the potential benefit of opening the refuge are exaggerated. Alaska senators honored veterans in Washington today and last night were part of a successful effort to pass legislation aimed at getting more veterans jobs. There are an estimated 240,000 unemployed vets from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
On the eve of Veterans Day, the U.S. Senate passed legislation to get veterans more job training and encourage businesses to hire them. Yesterday's unanimous vote was a rare display of bipartisanship in Congress and the first piece of President Obama's jobs package to get approval. The Vow to Hire Heroes Act provides new tax credits of up to $5,600 to companies that hire unemployed veterans and up to $9,600 in credits for hiring disabled vets who've been out of work for at least half a year. It also improves or puts into place career counseling and job training for troops transitioning to civilian life and lets them apply for jobs in the federal government before they leave service. Alaska senators were both pushing for the changes before President Obama incorporated them into his jobs plan. Democrat Mark Begich.
With 12% or more unemployed within the veterans community, an enormous amount, one out of four Iraqi, Afghanistan veterans unemployed, we have to do something to help get folks back to work.
The bill requires the government to do studies comparing military skills with the civilian world, which could help vets prove they're qualified to hold jobs similar to what they did in the service. Senator Begich recently heard from an Alaskan who was a skilled combat zone medic, but here at home was considered qualified only to drive an ambulance. Begich says this is just one way Congress can help veterans who face not only high unemployment rates, but emotional and psychological challenges transitioning out of the war zone and high suicide rates as well.
When you're a veteran, you come back and there's no job, you're unable to provide for your family, it adds to the stress, which of course gets to a lot of other issues, which could end up with individuals doing harm to themselves or others. So in a lot of ways, this is an important piece, but not the only piece.
The Veterans Employment Bill is expected to pass the House and would become the only piece of the president's jobs plan to gain traction in the divided Congress. The Senate's work prevented Begich and Murkowski from heading home, but they spent the day attending events in Washington honoring veterans, and both launched projects reaching out to Alaska's men and women who've served. Senator Murkowski attended a ceremony at the Vietnam Women's Veterans Memorial and volunteered alongside retired General Stanley McChrystal with Habitat for Humanity in an effort that brings together military and civilian communities. She's also launching a Soldier Spotlight project. It's in collaboration with the Library of Congress's ongoing Veterans History Project. Murkowski's office will highlight an Alaskan veteran each month, posting online a biography and interview. Senator Murkowski says it's designed to honor and bring attention to service members and learn from their stories. Senator Begich is also creating an online platform for veterans. His office opened today, a Heroes Hub, on his website. It's a clearinghouse of contacts and information for veterans on everything from health benefits to finding jobs. Senator Begich says it's also a place to create community.
It will be really a service center where veterans can go to, active military can go to, see what benefits and services they can get access to. But also another piece, which I think is a very exciting piece, is it will be an opportunity for people to tell us about their veteran, their hero out there, their Alaska hero. So it's really engaging Alaskans and being part of this bigger family, which is the Alaska Veterans Family.
Today, Senator Begich and his family visited Arlington National Cemetery to lay a wreath at the grave of Alaskan Ronald Hemingway, who was born in Cordova, attended Wasilla High School and the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and was killed on September 11, 2001, in the attack on the Pentagon. Begich expected the visit to Arlington to be particularly poignant this year for his family, who recently lost its own veteran, Begich's father-in-law, a former Army colonel. The only veteran on Alaska's congressional delegation, Representative Don Young, did not attend Veterans Day events because he was traveling, according to his office. He put out a statement last night commending service members and calling on Congress not to make budget cuts that hurt them. Young served in the U.S. Army's 41st Tank Battalion in the 1950s. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The Alaska VA healthcare system is working to get the word out about their Tribal Veteran Representative Program. TVRs are volunteers that train to assist Native veterans in their communities with filing VA paperwork to access benefits through the VA system. Marsha Hoffman-DeVoe is the Alaska VA healthcare spokeswoman. She says it's a simple one-page form for someone to nominate a community person to be their TVR.
It might be the Tribal Council, or the tribal government, or oftentimes since we work with healthcare organizations, it may be someone within the healthcare organization. That tells us as a VA federal facility that this person is vetted, you know, by an organization in their community.
Hoffman-DeVoe says the TVRs get 3 days of training. She says currently there are 35 in Alaska, but the goal is to have 65 more trained in 2012 for a total of 100. She says they hope to get people in positions all across the state.
There's not as many in interior Alaska, and I don't think we have anybody down like on the Aleutian chain. But we have several in southeast Alaska, several on the Kenai Peninsula. We're as far north as Barrow, Kotzebue, and Nome. We have some in western Alaska. So we actually are getting a pretty good representation, you know, throughout the state.
The positions are not VA jobs, but are instead community volunteers who want to help their fellow veterans. Willard Jackson Sr. is a TVR in Ketchikan. Jackson is a Vietnam vet who served with the Army's 82nd Airborne Infantry Division. He's been a tribal veteran representative for 5 years. He says all veterans are entitled to something in the system, whether it's health care, home loans, or education. He says this is important for young men and women just coming home.
They're not coming in the system. We really need to get them registered there at a 2-year window to apply for schooling. Once that's over, then, you know, it's a long struggle for them to get back in to go to schooling.
Jackson stresses the importance of getting registered as soon as veterans get home. He says he has found that in helping other vets, he also benefits from the experience.
It's an honor to work with the Iraqi vets and Afghanistan vets. And not only helps them, it helps me also. It helps me to process a lot of stuff that I forgot. I think those that are coming on board, if they look at it in that aspect, it would certainly help them in their process with post-traumatic stress or any other issues that were connected to a combat issue.
The VA pays for travel and lodging for the person attending the training. The next training will be in Anchorage in the spring. Hoffman-DeVoe says information will be posted on the Alaska VA website in December. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, reviving the sport of ski jumping in Anchorage.
A child learning how to fly, once they get it, like this, they're never the same.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
A storm with blizzard conditions and winds peaking at 55 miles an hour is roiling the waters of the eastern Bering Sea a day after the worst storm on the state's western coast in nearly four decades sputtered out. National Weather Service meteorologist Andy Brown says the system is expected to head toward the town of Bethel, several hundred miles south of Nome. It will be nowhere as powerful or widespread as the massive storm from earlier in the week. Brown says it's still a strong storm, but one that's more typical of winter weather Southwest Alaska experiences. Community leaders from around the state are gathered in Fairbanks this week for the Alaska Municipal League's Local Government Conference. The annual gathering is a chance to talk about shared issues. And as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, two are at the top of everyone's agenda.
The high cost of energy continues to drain Alaskans' pocketbooks and strain the economies of the state's cities and boroughs. So the issue was again on the minds of Alaska's municipal leaders who'd gathered at the Westmark Hotel for the Municipal League's annual conference. Executive Director Kathy Wasserman says every community in the state is affected by the issue.
For most communities, if you say to the mayor or any council or assembly members, what would you like to solve in your community? It's energy costs. Sure. They can't bring business into town at, 67 cents a kilowatt hour. I mean, it hampers everything.
But there's another issue that's been competing for the attention of League members during this year's conference, one that may seem a distant concern to residents of the interior, and that is the development of a state coastal management plan. North Pole Mayor Doug Isaacson says he's heard a lot about the issue this year from fellow League members.
Some mayors, some of the municipalities view this as their number one need.
Many of the elected officials at the conference say a coastal management plan is essential in order for Alaska to have a say in the activities on federally administered coastal lands and waters. That includes development of resources such as fisheries and oil. Isaacson says he generally supports development of a coastal management plan as long as it promotes resource development.
I don't have angst in the initiative. Looking at how it can be applied by some folks who might want to obstruct us, That's where the angst comes in.
Denali Borough Mayor Dave Tallarico says the plan would promote resource development by, among other things, coordinating shipments of coal from the Usabelli mine near Healy and fuel produced by North Pole's refineries by rail to Alaska's ports and products that come into the ports and are brought into the interior. Tallarico says that's why development of a coastal management plan is important to all Alaskans.
All the way up from a big thing like outer continental shelf drilling, to the potential of shipping in the future some type of resources. And it's not just goods out, but goods in. And all of those local communities, even including us in the interior, when we're talking about goods and a rail extension to Point McKenzie and goods that come in and out of the Anchorage port and things that come into Seward and everything, I think it impacts everybody in the state.
Wasserman says that's the message that League members from coastal communities have been sharing with municipal leaders at the conference to build support for development of a coastal management plan when the legislature convenes in January. The lawmakers and the governor's office failed this spring to agree on a new plan during the regular session and a special session devoted solely to the issue. The existing plan expired June 30th. In lieu of legislative action, three municipal leaders from the Kenai Peninsula Borough, Kodiak Island Borough, and the city of Juneau all filed a ballot initiative application last month to launch a statewide petition drive to get the issue before Alaskan voters next year. If the State Elections Division certifies the application, the initiative committee will need to gather more than 25,000 signatures from around the state. Organizers say they want to have 27,000 signatures collected before the legislature convenes on January 17th. To help in that effort, the Alaska Mayors Conference, a group affiliated with the Municipal League, voted Wednesday evening to give $10,000 to help pay for that signature gathering effort. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
November is National Homeless Youth Awareness Month. In Alaska's long, cold winter, the issue of kids who don't have a place to stay is especially serious. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, an effort in Fairbanks would establish an emergency shelter to help get youth off the street.
A candlelight vigil was held in Fairbanks this week to recognize the plight of homeless kids. The youth, mostly teenagers, are considered an invisible population. But Mary Lee Bates, program director for the nonprofit Fairbanks Youth Advocates, says a lot of local kids are homeless.
In the course of a year, anywhere from 400 to 500 youth that are in school, now that's K through 12, are identified. Now, this last year, there were at least 100 other youth, teens, that were identified that were not in school. And if you talk to agencies, a lot of them are saying upwards to 800 people is 800 youth is their estimate of young people that are homeless.
Fairbanks Youth Advocates and several other local groups are working to start an emergency shelter for homeless kids aged 12 to 17. Fairbanks has been without a dedicated facility since 2004, when Fairbanks Native Association was forced to close its family-focused shelter due to the loss of federal grant and other funding. Bates says a few kids are taken in at the Fairbanks Presbyterian Hospitality House shelter, which tries to keep two beds open for youth, but that homeless kids have limited options for getting out of the cold.
They couch surf. They hang out in local businesses and 24-hour places. They hang out with friends. Sometimes they compromise their safety and make, decisions that we wouldn't want any child to make.
Bates says the goal of the new shelter project is to provide a short-term refuge for street kids. She says services will be focused on the essentials.
Safety, food, clothing, access to medical care, counseling, individual counseling, family mediation. You know, this is a temporary shelter. The goal is always, if possible, to reunite the teen with their families.
Bates is optimistic about getting the new youth shelter open by next year. Fairbanks Youth Advocates has been donated a downtown triplex, and the community has identified the shelter as its top choice to submit for a $750,000 federal grant. The Community Development Block grant would pay for renovating the shelter building, which Bates says is in rough shape.
It needs new boilers, and it needs new siding, and it needs new windows, and it really does need a lot.
The City Council will consider submission of the Fairbanks Youth Advocates Shelter Project for a Community Development Block grant. City Accountant and Grants Administrator Margarita Bell says community projects from around the state will compete for a total of $2.4 million. Bell says the grant program comes with stipulations, and the city could be liable if the shelter can't support operations.
They have to sustain the project at least 5 years. And if they do not use it for the purpose of that grant, which would be to have an emergency shelter for youth, then the funds would have to be returned.
Bell says the Community Development Block Grant is a great opportunity for the youth homeless shelter, especially given that the program may be on the way out due to federal budget cuts. Fairbanks Youth Advocates Bates says the plan is to partner with other groups and use AmeriCorps members to staff the youth shelter to keep operational expenses low. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
Support for AK comes from the Federal Aviation Administration, setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports. FAA.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue, Dillingham,
Sitka, Chugiak, Fairbanks, Fort Yukon, Wrangell, Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, Aleknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Len Anderson. This week on AK,
ski jumping. Anchorage has always been known for its cross-country skiing. Now, a group of volunteers are hoping to revive interest in another snow sport in the city, ski jumping. The 40-meter jump at Hilltop Ski Area had fallen into disrepair over the years, but after a flurry of activity this fall, it's ready for a new generation of jumpers to begin taking flight. APRN's Annie Feit has the story.
You have to be very fit to be a ski jumper.
You must get really in good shape.
Oh, yes. Kids walk up this with their skis and then haul them up to the top of the jump. It's amazing.
We were just climbing to the bottom of the jump. My tour guide, Vivian Murray, describes herself as a jumping mom, but she is clearly much more than that. Although she does talk about the program like a proud parent, bursting with enthusiasm as they describe their kid.
It's going to be off the charts because there's so much potential.
Vivian is helping lead the effort to refurbish the old jumps at Hilltop. There's a 40-meter and a 64-meter, but the smaller jump needed the most attention.
The 40-meter jump was built with untreated wood, so it didn't last very long, and it was becoming
decrepit.
Decrepit.
That's Coach Dan Bevington chiming in. He grew up jumping in Illinois and got involved in the sport again after moving to Alaska. He began coaching when Carl Ide was still the driving force behind ski jumping in Anchorage. The demanding German pastry chef competed in the Olympics in ski jumping in 1936. He's responsible for the Hilltop jumps being built in 1984. And Dan says Ide had no trouble finding jumpers for the program.
When Carl Ide started this program back in the 80s, there was a lot of interest because ski jumping at that time was the extreme sport. There was really nothing like it. And so he would just sit over here and then he would just start picking out kids from the downhill area and say, come on over here, you need to jump.
I had passed away in 2008 at age 99, and the program has suffered since. But things are turning around. This fall, a group of volunteers spent weekends rebuilding the decrepit 40-meter jump with treated wood. On the brilliant sunny day I visited, they were working on constructing a new landing for the jump stairs.
Let's see. What if we did it just like that, then? That would be our cut right there. How does that look?
Oh, yeah, it looks better. It's dragging on.
So pull it back up a little bit. Oops, sorry.
At the last Olympics, the U.S. men's Nordic combined team, that's ski jumping and skate skiing, took home the country's first Olympic medal in the sport. And Vivian says that's helping drive the campaign to reinvigorate the Anchorage program.
There's been this resurgence of energy back into the sport on a national level, and that's created us to, as a community, look at it, because these are things that we can do here. We can't compete with football or all the national pro teams down south, but we can produce skiers here. That is a reality. We're already doing it, and we already have this facility. So all this needs is a little helping hand.
The Hilltop jumps are not Olympic-sized, but they are perfect for helping kids build a foundation in the sport. Last year, 10 signed up for the jumping program. This year, Vivian had to cut registration off at 30. Coach Dan Bevington can't wait to get his new recruits up on the jump. He says even if they can only make it off the 40-meter one time, they will never forget it.
A child learning how to fly, once they get it, like this, they're never the same. And they're going to look at every problem that they have in life differently than other people do.
Women's jumping will be an Olympic sport for the first time in 2014. And Dan says that means girls in the program can dream big.
It's this exciting time for women in the sport of ski jumping, with it being the first Olympics coming up. And it's just the sky's the limit.
Alpine and Nordic skiing often end up being exclusive pursuits because the gear is so expensive. But the jumping club has a hut full of new ski gear to loan out to anyone who wants to get involved. There's even a master's program for adults who want to try a new sport. And Vivian recommends another great way to participate, spectating.
When we have people going off the 64-meter jump here, people flood out of it doesn't matter how cold it is, they flood out of the Hilltop ski chalet to watch. Because it's crazy. I mean, it's fun to watch. People flying through the air. It's craziness.
With plenty of snow on the ground in Anchorage, the craziness is about to begin. The first skiers will fly off the rebuilt 40-meter jump early next week. For AK, I'm Annie Feit.
For 300 Villages this week, we continue the snow sports theme with a visit to Two Rivers, a community near Fairbanks known as Sled Dog Paradise.
My name is Allie Zirkel, and I am a dog musher living in the fabulous town of Two Rivers, Alaska. Two Rivers, the community, is a nice little bedroom community for Fairbanks because I would have to say there's probably more beds for Alaskan Huskies than there are for people out here. So it's kind of it's doggy to the sense of of unyielding, to be honest with you. When you sit outside and you hear the howls across the entire neighborhood, you know that everyone's fed and everyone's happy because it's a collective howl across the entire Two Rivers proper. The community is really nice because it's got a base of operations almost. It's Pleasant Valley Store sits right in the middle of the community, and there's the post office. You can stop and get a cup of coffee, get your mail, and talk to all the regulars who are sitting at the tables around talking about how little snow we have and how ding-dang cold it is. And then, of course, there's a heavy equipment rental place. You always need that in a small community, and a laundromat, a barber, and a Bob's Fix-It shop. I think it's neat to live in Two Rivers, where you've got the option to going into town, which is Fairbanks for us, to buy what you need or to go, you know, out to a restaurant or something like that. But then you drive back out to Two Rivers and you really get away from it all. You have to make a point to go to Two Rivers. You wouldn't just pass through it per chance. Not like, you know, Houston or Willow that you just drive by because you're going from Fairbanks to Anchorage. Two Rivers, you have to go, hey, I think I'll go to Two Rivers. So it's kind of neat that way.
That was Two Rivers musher Allie Zirkel. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. Tune in next week when we'll dig into a school lunch at Tenakee Springs. But this isn't the school lunch you remember. I'm Len Anderson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. And Len Anderson was our guest host for AK this week. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web editor. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.